welcome back to your Hebrew Nation Morning Show, where Hebrews from all over the world gather to share and listen about the biblical roots of our faith. Sit back with your favorite morning brew and join the conversation. Lines are now open, so call 503-967-3001. 503-967-3001. His kingdom, his people, and your radio station.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to the Hebrew Nation Morning Show. You are on with the wise guys. It's good to be here with you and with Tuck and with Aaron and this cold little portion of the Northwest.
Yeah, you're not kidding. It's been cold.
Yeah, it's all right. I'll tell you what, Aaron, I'm ready to take my computer and throw it across the room.
Hey, and that's saying something because you've got an Apple. So just think about me. I've got a PC I'm working on over here.
It's an Apple. That's why I'm ready to throw it across the room.
Oh, I know what you're saying. It's because what they're doing.
Yeah.
What Apple's doing. Or not doing, I guess, whatever you're going to say.
You know, I think we've come to a point where it's time for all of us to become aware.
So you're saying you want, we all should have more information? Is that what you're saying?
Or at least be willing to look for information and be aware of what we're doing, what we're buying, and where we're going. I mean, okay, let's back it up. I mean, you guys have seen all these videos that's going on in China. This horrible.
The fake news?
Oh, gosh, well, finally they're reporting about these horrendous lockdowns, what the police are doing to people over there, you know.
Hey,
rounding them up, putting them in concentration camps.
If you're not putting your mask on and keeping it over your nose, like the government says, you should be thrown in jail, right?
Yeah, you lose your business, you lose everything. Unbelievable. We don't even have the right to even say, I don't want that in my body. Don't put that in my body. You know, but here China is doing these communist things that we've always thought that were terrible, right?
They're glorious.
I mean, America has always stood for freedom, right? Freedom of speech.
Well, it used to stand for freedom.
Yeah. I'm looking at
the current administration.
Oh, my goodness. Well, it's not just the administration. It's us who participate in the buying and sharing of products that support communism. Why I was going to throw my computer across the room, because the top 10 companies, I was looking at the top 10 companies that do business, not to mention the NBA, who do business.
Don't get me started on LeBron James.
With China. Apple is number 10. Yeah. Who does business? 51% of all their business is locked up into China. Starbucks, number 9.
I didn't realize China was that caffeinated.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess they do have 1.5 billion people or whatever it is now.
Yeah, they picked the wrong type of coffee, you know?
Yeah.
You know, but unbelievable. Then Intel is number 8 doing business. Procter & Gamble, 55% of their market share.
Procter & Gamble? Wow.
Procter & Gamble. So think of all those little products that you buy from Procter & Gamble.
Well, why is that surprising, Ron? There are 1.5 billion people, and that's 16-17% of the entire population.
Yeah. Coca-Cola, quit buying Sprite. 61% of their business. Nike. Come on, you guys. You can find a different kind of shoe.
Yeah, we're a cowboy boot. Yeah. Nike doesn't wear a cowboy boot. Doesn't make cowboy boots.
Boeing. Unbelievable. All their aircrafts, et cetera, all being made in China. Microsoft, number 3, dominates the PC operating systems. All their market is in China. According to Web Analytics, the company has about 99.31% of the market share.
Wow. That's amazing, because
that's kind of like a monopoly.
You think?
in the U.S., this number is years old, you know, 15 years old probably. It was like 85% market share in the U.S.
Wow.
Because so many more people in the U.S. were using Apple or, you know, some of the other third party kind of stuff.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking that if I'm watching these protests and watching a communist country actually beat its citizens into submission, which is what I watched, literally beat people.
Or was that Portland?
Oh, yeah, it's here in America, too. You know, wow. Why do we not write in and say to a company, I can no longer use you? General Motors at the top.
General Motors. No wonder I don't like them.
And you want to know the number one?
Who's number one?
Give me a wild guess.
The U.S.
Well, yeah, Biden.
Hunter.
Biden and Hunter. Man, we got a deal for you. KFC, Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Oh, okay, that's...
I would never have thought...
Unbelievable.
Get out.
Wow, no wonder the lines are so big for that other chicken company. What's that called? Owned by Christian Group.
Yeah, I just drew the link on them.
Yeah, right over here in Kaiser.
Yeah, they did. They just opened up.
Uh-huh. Lines and lines of cars.
Oh, shoot.
We'll let you guys all guess about what that company that is. But my goodness, so what do we do? I mean, we see these things happening around the world. Is there any hope? Is there any good news?
Well, there is hope and there is good news, but how do we get to it? I mean, how do you is there enough of it, I guess, is the question.
There is, but people aren't thinking anymore.
What does that mean, Tuck? I mean,
what was that word? I don't know what that means.
What do we do with our thoughts?
Thinking, as far as you just came up with the concept, is that all these people are doing business with China.
Yeah.
What's the big deal? It's just business with China. We're just living, you know. Well, make a point in saying that they're doing business with China, this entity that is killing so many millions and millions of people every day. And is that wrong or right? If it's right, well, then you're okay. If it's wrong, well, then you need to say something. And they're not. They're not even thinking about it. They're just going on with their lives. I'm guilty of that myself.
How do we stop from doing that? I mean, it's like everyone says, well, we live in a terrible world, therefore we shouldn't condemn what's going on around us. We got to live, so let's just keep using these products. But do we ever actually just pull ourselves away from?
But that's the thing, is that we're so used to being placated, we're so used to having things nice and easy for ourselves. Why do we need that stuff? I don't have to have the best. I don't have to have the worst. I don't have to have the easiest. There are certain things in life that if you know something's right, that's what you should do it for, that reason alone, because it's right. Not because it's the best, not because it's the easiest, not because it's going to give you the greatest profit margin, but it's because it's right.
Get out.
Amen.
But don't I just... People might say, well, I just hurt myself then. I can't go to the motel I want. I can't buy the coffee I want.
So what?
Why would you want to buy Starbucks anyway?
Yeah.
I know, right?
It's like
stuff's polluted.
I make my own coffee at the house. I'm not going to spend $6 to get a cup of coffee from Starbucks or whatever they charge. That makes no sense. For me, I use, 2.5 quarts of water for a pot of coffee?
Yeah.
And I use 6 scoops of coffee and I use one filter every brew, and that's enough for me for all day long. And that cost me maybe $1 all told. And I have 5 6 cups, 7 cups, 8 cups of coffee all day long.
You don't want to buy a $6 latte?
No, thank you.
That's a latte.
I can make my own latte. I can put in chocolate milk. I can put in chocolate powder. I can put in sugar. I can put in whatever. I can make my own latte. That's the ease of it because I control it. I can do it. I don't have to pay somebody else, you know, to make me this coffee. And that's what's stupid because we are catered to. We're prima donnas.
Prima donnas. I love it.
I'm a post Madonna, really, but you know.
Okay. Well, I think prima Madonna. You know, you could say, well, I'm a post Madonna.
Yeah.
Well, just to give you some of these things again, I find it fascinating. It's very hard. I challenge you guys, look this up in your computer, all right, and find out U.S. companies that do business with China. It's very hard to decipher which ones are actually doing it. It's almost like there's some sort of cover-up going on. You know, I hate to say that, but yeah. But there it is.
That sounds like a conspiracy.
Oh, yeah.
Stop it. Get out.
That is the question. Okay, so
what is the question?
Get out.
What?
Yeah, that you just happened to actually, you know,
get out.
I'm out of here.
it's almost like we were watching a show with my little girls. Chip and Joanna Gaines, you know, they do the fixer upper thing and they have this whole business now.
Yeah.
They were doing something and Chip was he says they were doing something and dang gum. and the girls started saying it, so I said, dang gum. So now they it's kind of the thing we say now. It's just kind of
dang gum.
Dang gum.
I think everything has become so totally intertwined,
yeah,
that it's almost impossible to get out. You know, back in the old days, the government was supposed to protect us from monopolies, and we used to have hundreds and thousands of owners of different companies. But when we actually start looking,
Bell,
yeah, I mean, you start looking at the companies, and you see this cascade effect. There'll be like 10 companies up here at the top, and then you list all the subsidiary companies mm-hmm. that are underneath them mm-hmm. that own them.
Right.
They own everything else.
Yeah. How do you get out? I'm going to take a moment here just to think for a minute. If you guys want
that's
to...
That's a scary thought.
Yeah, I know, right. Yeah. Probably it takes more than a moment.
Yeah. Let's turn to Genesis, Bereshit, okay? Bereshit. And it's interesting to me that we see examples of this type of attitude, these types of things that come into play. In this particular week, we're studying Va Etse, right?
Well, don't say that too many times, Vasi.
Vayetse.
Get your tongue all taken up, start back and talk words.
Yeah. What does that mean, Tuck? It means...
And he went out.
And he went out.
Get out!
That's what I'm saying.
Yahweh was ahead of his time.
I know, right? You know, there's a lot of intertwination back even then.
I think he just made up that word.
I did. When I look at the end of the study of this week, it's in chapter 31, and we'll actually break down some of these things for you today because I wanted to take some time to actually look at Scripture to figure out how to get out. But let's take a look in chapter 31 of Bereshit, Genesis. And this is when Laban and Jacob decide that they're going to meet. They don't necessarily decide. Laban's chasing Jacob. He wants to take him down. But they have to meet, and they have to come up with some sort of covenant on how to
Laban had decided they're going to meet.
Yeah, Laban had decided. And he says this to Jacob, and it's in verse 33. The daughters are my daughters, the children are my children, the flocks are my flocks, and all that you see is mine.
That's not in 33.
43. Sorry. I needed to put on my glasses. Yeah, thanks, Tuck. Isn't it weird that Laban has such an attitude? We're going to go back here throughout the morning and see what brought this all about and why this is so important for us to understand, because we are told that we're starting to enter into this time period. Many people that we've interviewed on this show have said we're getting close to the time of Jacob's trouble, right? That's a 7-year period of a lot of things that will happen to us that are really bad.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to thinking about that. And I go, well, Jacob's trouble. That's maybe in the future, it's maybe happening now, or should we maybe look to see what the troubles Jacob had?
I don't think we should bother ourselves, but we should continue to live as Yeshua instructed us, how Yahweh wants us to live.
I think so, but shouldn't we take a look and see what Jacob's troubles were like to maybe give us an attitude? Let me give you a list, Tuck, okay? Let's see if it works out for you. Just in this study alone, Jacob had the trouble of running for his life away from a jealous brother. That's right. The first one, okay?
So you're saying he had to get out?
He had to get out. Okay, because his jealous brother wanted the birthright but didn't want the responsibilities of the birthright. So that's one of his troubles.
That kind of sounds like familiar today.
That's what I'm saying. Okay, so number two. He has to go live in a land and work with an unrighteous relative. That's a trouble.
Wow, that sounds familiar today.
Does that sound familiar today? Okay, so he's deceived by Laban's treachery, so he can't marry or align himself with the woman he loves.
That sounds familiar today.
You think? Think about voting systems, okay, just like that. Okay, so what about this? He's not allowed to leave Laban's household. Is that a trouble for today? So can we get out of our medical systems, our educational systems, our banking systems? Just asking.
Can you get off the grid?
Can I get off the grid? Here's another one. He has to face the jealousy and the anger of Laban's family that they have towards him. So if I think of the unrighteous relative he has to live with, and now all the other relatives that are there and they don't like us anymore.
Wait, so... we may have relatives we don't want to live with?
I don't know.
Huh.
Here's another one of his troubles. He's denied wages, and he's cheated by Laban. Not once. Not twice.
He needed a union.
Not three times.
Jacob's union.
The Bible tells us Laban cheats him out of his wages 10 times. Huh. Let's see.
How many taxes... Do we have that come out of our paycheck?
Thank you. So if
or pocketbook, depending on which time we have to pay them.
I'm starting to think that maybe an awareness, and this is what I'm talking about, Tuck. I'm not denying you saying that we shouldn't continue to live our lives, but I think what's important is that many times we need to become aware of the times that we're actually living in, so we can make a decision.
I agree. There's nothing wrong with being aware of what's going on around you. But to invest all your energies into worrying about it is stupid.
I'm not worrying about
right,
it.
Right, yeah. The worry is where the problem comes in. But I'm the knowledge, though, we should have. Yeah, yes. Yeah.
Look at the world. What do? They worry. They want to control it. And it's not yours to control. It's his to control.
Right. We just need to understand it.
That's why these Torah lessons are so important.
Yeah.
Because we're going to see how Jacob gets out of the worry factor and starts to become a new person. I want to really encourage you guys this week. Please read this section before your next Shabbat. Okay? I think I have my schedule out here in front of me. Let's see if it's here. Yes, it is.
Genesis 28:10 to 32:3.
That's the Torah section, Genesis 28:10 to 32:3. You can also look up John, which is in the New Testament. Bereshit, not Bereshit, but
John 1:43 to 51.
Thank you. My mind is somewhere else.
And the Haftarah the Brit. Is Hosea 12:13 to 14:9.
Okay, so here's the challenge. We know that we could possibly be living or getting really close to the time of Jacob's little trouble. So the idea...
Big trouble.
Yeah.
Is let's start waking up to see what that trouble actually looks like and how are you going to deal with it? How are you going to face it? And what are you going to do about it, if anything? That's going to be the challenge. Just to give you a hint, Genesis 31:11. Before we get into talking about it as we turn around to the next half hour, there's a very important comment Jacob makes before actually leaving with his family. It's found in Genesis 31:11. He says this. Well, he's relating the dream to his wives, and he says, "The angel of God said to me in the dream, 'Jacob,' and I said,
'Here I am.'"
Here I am. That's an important concept. That means hineni, which means behold, I am ready. I am. Behold, here I am. It takes on this picture of complete availability. It says, I'm tired of where I've been. I want to look for somewhere else to go.
Mm-hmm.
And he lays himself out to be used. I think this is really important for us to understand as we move into these times, when we see these terrible things that are going on in our world, whether or not you're in China or somewhere else. What do you think, Aaron?
Well, the thought just jumped in my head here. That's a very bold response.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're now saying you're bringing the attention to yourself.
Yeah.
I'm right here, over here. See me. Look at me. I'm right here.
I'm ready.
I'm ready to for whatever is coming.
Yeah.
You know, and how willing are we to do that when our government says, "Hey, Roland, we're looking for you." You know.
I know.
You know, we don't want to stand up and say, "I'm right here." You know.
We still want to buy our Nike shoes and our Starbucks coffee.
Right, and by we want to fit into the crowd,
yeah,
and
no,
kind
right.
of disappear into the crowd of people.
Who else said these words? Do you guys remember?
I'm trying to go back.
And,
mm-hmm.
A lot of people said
Abraham said it.
That's who I was trying to think
and
of.
His
yes.
final test, his the seven that he had. Here I am. He's not only said it once; he said it twice.
No.
And then we also know that Isaiah said it. In fact, it says
that's right.
In Isaiah 6:8, Yahweh comes down and he asks, "Whom shall I send and who will go for us?" Meaning Elohim. And then I said, meaning Isaiah, "Here I am. Send me." Wow. I don't know how we're going to deal with this when we get back, but I'm looking forward to see what we come up with with the wise guys. And you can write in and talk to us at the number 3.
Wise guys.
At.
HebrewNation.net. That's the number 3.
Wise guys.
At.
HebrewNation.net. Right on. And maybe our systems work today. I don't know. 503-9. Oh, someone is listening to us. This is great. The other chicken place that is not owned by China?
Yeah.
Chick-fil-A.
Chick-fil-A, that's right.
Thank you, Vicky. We love you so much for texting into us.
Chick-fil-A.
Yes, and she says that she loves us. Isn't that nice?
I drove by them the other day and I saw them. Huge line.
You're listening to Hebrew Nation Radio, a division of Torah to the Nations.
Wow. Here we are back again with the Wise Guys. So glad you could join us. Again, you can write to us at the number 3.
Wise Guys.
At
HebrewNation.net.
That's the number 3.
Wise Guys.
At
HebrewNation.net. Boy, we had an echo there going on.
Yeah, it was really interesting.
We're talking about Jacob's trouble. What is it? Are we going to be facing it? Are we into it? And what's the benefit of looking over the Torah section to actually figure out what some of the little troubles that Jacob went through, and do they correlate with us today?
Because the book was written for us.
How do you know that?
It was written for everybody, but it was written especially for us because it was told back in the day that it was for the end times.
Yeah. And all scripture is given for inspiration, instruction, reproof, all that kind of stuff. Structure was the Tanakh. Yeah. I mean, scripture was the Tanakh. That's the Torah, the writings, the prophets. All those sorts of things put together for our benefit.
Yeah. Brit HaShah didn't happen until about 350, 360 A.D.
Yeah. I mean, so here we got this wonderful resource to dive into to give us some thoughts on how we're going to approach these end of days. And right here in front of us, we have Jacob and all the troubles that he faced. It's an interesting story, especially when you start comparing it to our present world.
Yeah, you know, it's really kind of interesting because even if this doesn't play into end time prophecy,
yeah,
it certainly plays into history repeating itself. Let me say that again.
I know, right? I think there's so many parallels within this story.
Right.
That kind of wake us up. The very first part of this story, we have Jacob who's running for his life from his brother.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Brother-in-law.
Esau?
Oh, I thought you were talking about Laban.
No. At the very beginning of the story, we know that Jacob has to leave. And why does he leave?
You know, great, because of great life choices.
Right. I mean, it's pretty interesting.
Because of he has good faith. He believes everything will work out for him just right.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, I'm thinking of somebody else. I'm sorry.
We have this. We're in verse 28. In verse 41, it says that Esau bore a grudge against Jacob because of the blessing with which his father had blessed him. And Esau said to himself, "The days of mourning for my father are near. Then I will kill my brother Jacob." This is interesting. So that's in chapter 27, verse 41. Esau bears a grudge against Jacob. Why did Jacob receive a blessing? Why did he get the blessings of Isaac? And what's going on there? I think it's a really important question for us to uncover.
Mm-hmm.
Which son did Isaac favor, Esau or Jacob?
Well, the scripture says that he liked Esau a lot because he was the man of the field, man of the hunt, so to speak, where Jacob was a man of the tents, mm-hmm. learning, studious, and Isaac was more, he was a wannabe. He was somebody who had lived his life. And in my opinion, lived it well, but yet there were certain things that he always wanted to do that he never did do. And one of those things was live out in the field and do hunting type things.
Yeah.
And so that's why he bonded real well with Esau.
Well, that might be a reason. Yeah. Scripture tells us his eyes grew dim as he grew old.
Yeah.
We don't necessarily have a full description of why he liked the man of the field, but Esau seems to represent, I mean, the man of the hunt. The man of the hunt seems to represent within Scripture the man of flesh.
Right.
Because if I'm hunting, I'm going after fleshly things.
Right.
And the man of the tent means I'm going after spiritual things. And so we have two distinctions. Rebekah loved Jacob more, and Isaac loved Esau more. Do parents have favorites?
No. Nope.
They shouldn't have favorites, but sometimes they do.
Sometimes they do, right?
I mean, there are certain children, sometimes for things that are constant, certain children are wonderful.
Right.
Yeah.
Whereas certain other children are not so wonderful.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of a natural thing because we you know, not that it's I'm trying to justify it or anything, but it's just because it's we connect with that child more or less.
They're more like us, or they're
There's some kind of connection that's a little easier to deal with, and so as a parent, we need to be aware of that and we focus on okay, I can't just have one person, you know, one of the kids that is the one I do everything with. We have to do the same with both, even though we might not connect enough with the other. And so it's kind of one of those funny balance things. But
it's one of those things. Parenting is not for sissies. Mm-hmm. It's a serious deal.
Right.
And you should never judge your children when you're angry.
Mm-hmm.
You should, I mean, your anger could be well validated. It could be strong reasons for it. But you should not punish your child until you are cool-headed.
Yeah.
And you come back to it and say, well, I'm going to punish you because this, this, and this. Whack, whack, you're done.
Well, I don't know how we got there, but hang on for a minute. We have Rebekah, and we have Isaac, and we have Jacob, right?
Right.
And Esau. That's the picture, right?
Well, mm-hmm. Laban was never
sacked. Not yet. Okay. But remember, what's amazing, if you look back further in the Torah section, you'll find that there's a whole chapter dedicated to Rebekah. I find that fascinating in that typically Scripture is mostly about men.
Right.
And in this particular case, we have a whole chapter that's dedicated towards Rebekah.
And so you have to ask, okay, why is her story so significant that we need to know more about her, and set that up so we know to go forward why she's important.
That would be
this.
A good question. You know, we actually know that at the time of the twins being in her womb, she was told that someone's going to serve someone else.
Mm-hmm.
So she's probably thinking in her mind, hey, you know, I'm going to help Jacob get this blessing that I know that was promised to me.
Mm-hmm.
And since Isaac's eyes are growing dim, and since Isaac seems to be leaning towards the man of the flesh and not the man of the spirit, I need to step in.
Yeah.
Be that as it may, look at what happens after the threat from Esau. Here's Rebekah jumping in again. Now, when the words of her elder son Esau were reported to Rebekah, she sent and called her younger son Jacob and said to him, behold, your brother Esau is consoling himself concerning you by planning to kill you. Now, therefore, my son, obey my voice and arise, flee to Haran to my brother Laban, and stay with him a few days until your brother's fury subsides, until your brother's anger against you subsides, and he forgets what you did to him. Then I shall send and get you from there. Did that ever happen?
No.
It didn't.
Anger, everybody is different. You know, some people can be dreamers. Some people can be realists. In this particular case, I think Rebecca was a dreamer because she thought that her son's anger, Esau's anger, would subside. Not so. It never subsided. He always wanted to kill Jacob. He learned that he was not going to. He learned that Jacob had a angel on his shoulder, however you want to term that. He was protected of Yah. And whether Esau was able to make that connection directly, I don't know. But he saw the smartness, the wisdom of not killing his brother.
I'm not sure if Jacob actually knew that he was safe until later on in the next chapter. We look at Genesis 28. Jacob finally has a dream. This is when Esau is chasing him.
Well, even at that point, I don't know that he really thought he was safe until, you know, well into his middle life.
Because he still flees to Laban.
Right.
Right?
He thought he was dead when after he had had all his children and had all his wealth. And Laban or Esau was going to come back and meet up with him.
Yep.
And he thought he was dead then. And yet it was nice, you know. They made amends, so to speak.
Well, we have between last week's study and this week's, we actually have Jacob has a dream. That's the Jacob's mm-hmm. ladder.
Right.
Okay. He sees the heavenly beings going back and forth between earth. And he rises up in the morning, takes a stone, puts it under his head, and he calls that place Bethel. And he makes this vow. If God will be with me and keep me on this journey that I take, I will give me food to eat and garments to wear, and I return to my father's house in safety, then Yahweh will be my God. Notice how Jacob kind of...
Then Yahweh will be my...
His Elohim, his the one he serves.
So he's not at that point. He doesn't feel that he has that relationship at that point.
Right.
Wow, that's... That's
isn't
interesting.
That amazing?
Yeah.
He was laying the gauntlet down.
Yeah.
He was laying the gauntlet down. And that's when he goes to Laban. Now, it's interesting that we see some of these parallels historically. The pilgrims leave European countries. They come over here to the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
They're fleeing for their lives because they're being persecuted by the government and by the church. So they get out.
Get out.
They get out. And they go to another place, right? And it all looks pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at our original constitution, it kind of looked pretty good. How we started to form that. We went mm-hmm. through these wars and we start to come out as a nation. But look at what happens here. Laban, as Jacob comes into the land of Laban, who does he see? He sees a beautiful woman.
Oh, right.
Right?
Yes.
Rachel. He's going, huh?
Hey, I'm liking this land.
I like this land. I want to be here. I think this is amazing. So look at what he says. Okay?
What address?
Okay. Well, let's go all the way to, because I keep looking at this, I'm going, I got to back up.
Well, always.
Yeah. Jacob is talking with shepherds who are trying to figure out how to roll a stone back. This is a big old stone, okay? And so while he's speaking to them, this is chapter 29, verse 9. Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. And it came about when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went up and rolled the stone from the mouth of the well and watered the flock of Laban. All by himself.
So, okay. You know, it was probably a small stone, you know.
Yeah, but he sees this woman. He's definitely energized, right? So Jacob kisses Rachel and lifted his voice and wept. Now, he's probably weeping because he's thinking, okay, this is a relative of mine. Mm-hmm. I want to be in line. And Jacob told Rachel that he was a relative of her father and that he was Rebekah's son, and she ran and told her father. So it came about when Laban heard the news of Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house. Then he related to Laban all these things. And Laban said to him, "Surely you are my bone of my flesh." And he stayed with him for a month. Then Laban said to Jacob, "Because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what shall your wages be?" And Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah's eyes were weak, but Rachel was beautiful of form and face. So Jacob loved Rachel, and he said, "I will serve you 7 years for your younger daughter, Rachel."
Okay. I'm not going to have that weak-eyed girl. I'm going to go right for Rachel.
Is this the beginning of Jacob's little troubles?
No.
It's not the beginning?
It's not the beginning.
Well, his first beginning was running for his life, right? Well,
yes.
Okay.
And, you know, it's his issues with his brother, you know, so.
So now he's
because they were fighting in the womb. So he's
yeah, he's had troubles with his brother. He has to run from his brother. He's running for his life. Now he's going to live in a land with a relative.
Yeah.
He seems to be happy about the relative.
Mm-hmm.
And he sees someone he wants to align himself
with. Right. He's thinking he's got a new, fresh start.
Is it a fresh start? Or is it?
In a sense, it's a fresh start, but it's still more of the same stuff.
Yeah. It appears to be a fresh start. Like Aaron said, it's just more of the same stuff.
What's the same stuff?
It's travail. It's what we all go through, whether we're conscious of it or not. Yahweh is presenting to us his plan. Mm-hmm. For our lives. Do we accept that and get on board, or do we reject that and try to do it our way? Most of us try to do it our way.
I did it my way.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to think devious here for a minute. Okay, just slightly
devious.
Script. You see something that you like. You make a covenant with someone that's not so righteous. Is that one of my first steps of going down the wrong path to have trouble?
Could be. Not necessarily so, but could be.
Could be. Yeah. I like that.
Now, does Jacob know of Laban's character? How much does he know of Laban's character? He knows his relative, so he might think, hey, Laban's a good guy. Our family's good people.
Yeah. And
I know.
At Rachel, and Rachel certainly looks like a good
she,
woman.
She looks like good
right?
people.
She's got to come from somebody decent. Yet, I mean, that's one of the intricacies of family, that so many drastically different people can come from the same line.
And Jacob's mother sent him to Laban.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's thinking, okay, this isn't a bad thing.
Well, supposedly. If anybody knew, Rebecca knew mm-hmm. her brother. At least she should have.
Okay, so why does this happen? Think of it this way. Okay, let's go even further. Let's leave Jacob's story for a minute. And we understand that everyone goes down into the land of Egypt. Jacob actually takes his family eventually, fast forward in history, to Egypt. It seems like a good land.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Fresh start.
And Joseph is leading the place, and it's not a bad place.
Mm-hmm.
But then later, after Joseph dies, it becomes a place where Jacob's family eventually pulls himself into alignment with Egypt and eventually comes under the bondage of slavery. And again, now look at this other picture. It doesn't seem like a bad idea. Rebekah sends Jacob to Laban's land.
Yeah.
He starts to work for a beautiful woman. Eventually, it leads to what? Bondage.
Chaos.
Okay, so he has to work 7 years for Rachel. It ends up not doing very well. He finally finds out about Laban's treachery, works for another 7 years.
Yeah.
Is Jacob in bondage?
Mm-hmm.
Yes! He's having to work outside of himself with promises that are never kept. How do we find ourselves in bondage? I think that's the first question. So let's relate this story to today. We find ourselves in America thinking America is not bad.
Right.
Good place.
Because it was a good start. It was a fresh start when it was started. Fresh start.
And then what happens?
We stopped educating ourselves. That's, in my opinion, that's where the forefathers, if they had any failings, it was not in setting up an education process long term. To continue informing us about what we came from, the reason why we left Europe, the reason why we left persecution, the reason why we promote not necessarily Christianity, but the belief in God, belief in Yahweh, and doing things properly. They stopped doing that and allowed freedom, the pursuit of democracy, if you will, to be the driving influence. And that should not have happened. It should have always been Yahweh-centered, and it stopped being that way.
Yeah.
I mean, look at, and I know I'm sure I'm going to ruffle some feathers here, but.
Oh, here comes.
Christmas wasn't celebrated in America until the 1850s, 1860s. And the first 80 years, 90 years, it was not celebrated in America. That's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
What happened? Why was it? Why did it all of a sudden, why did the focus change? I mean, the principle behind Christmas is not bad, celebrating the birth of Yeshua, but nowhere in the Word does it say, celebrate my birth.
Right.
It doesn't reference that. It doesn't bring that up. You know?
Okay, so maybe we can align that up. This is, once you said that, my minds were drawn immediately to this. Jacob works for 7 years, thinking he's going to get Rachel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but now look what Laban says. It's not the practice in our place to marry off the younger before the firstborn.
That's right.
Why is this after 7 years? Why did Jacob know this before?
Tell me that first, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so he finds himself aligning himself with a custom in the land that's not necessarily dealing with the promise.
Right.
You just said we started to align ourselves with other customs in our lands that right. don't necessarily deal with the promise.
With the promise.
Isn't this amazing?
Mm-hmm.
What we do. And it even happens to Jacob. So he says, complete the bridal week of this one, and we will give you the other.
After another 7 years.
Notice how Laban talks about his daughters.
Yeah.
Complete it with this one. Then I'll give you another.
Yeah.
Like they're cattle.
Well, that's what they were.
Stop it, Tuck.
I know. They were.
Don't talk like that. That's terrible.
Right. It is terrible.
I agree. I don't have an issue with that. It is wrong. But that's how they felt.
So Jacob did so. He completed his week, and he gave him his daughter Rachel as wife. Laban also gave his maid Bilhah to his daughter Rachel as her maid. So Jacob went into Rachel also, and indeed he loved Rachel more than Leah, and he served for Laban for another 7 years.
So Laban's just unloading all of these problem girls. I mean, all of these girls of his.
Yeah. And what's Laban receiving?
Free labor.
Yeah.
I mean, not free labor. It's labor that he's paying for.
Yeah, he's getting a righteous man to do work for him.
Yeah.
Do we have that problem even today? Righteous giving righteous work to the unrighteous. How do we deal with that?
Well, our government is killing us with taxation. That's unrighteous as well as righteous are giving.
Yeah.
To the government system, but. Nonetheless, it's a taking, an illegal taking, because there is no representation in that taxation process.
Hmm. If we go further, we find out that eventually Jacob wants to leave. He's gotten Leah, he's gotten Rachel, but he's tired of doing all this stuff for Laban. Okay? I want you guys to look in chapter 30. Actually, let's go to 31 because we're going to actually not get into this. I think you guys need to study the arguments that happened with all of his wives and the production of wives. And he keeps on working for Laban. He eventually has to deal with stuff that doesn't happen. And let's go into chapter 30 at the end of it. All right.
30 or 31? You keep going 31. Back and forth here.
30.
Okay.
And it says this. We're going to get into, let's go to 25. Now it came about when Rachel had borne Joseph that Jacob said to Laban, send me away that I may go to my own place and to my own country. So this is the first time that he approaches Laban.
Mm-hmm.
Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, and let me depart, for you yourself know my service, which I render to you.
Be right.
Welcome back to your Hebrew Nation Morning Show, where Hebrews from all over the world gather to share and listen about the biblical roots of our faith. Sit back with your favorite morning brew and join the conversation. Lines are now open, so call 503-967-3001. 503-967-3001. His kingdom, his people, and your radio station.
Boop, 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 boop. Hey, glad you're still here with us, man. It's
I left a while ago.
I know, right? Sometimes when we hear these things from the scripture, it can get a little bit mind-boggling because we can't just really nail it down. But what we're trying to do here this morning is take you through a little bit of a walk of what Jacob's troubles look like in his life, okay? And then try to align it with even with our own troubles that we're facing today, because we're told in prophecy that we will be facing a time of Jacob's trouble.
So time out right there. I have learned one thing from Jacob.
Tell me.
Only one wife.
Yeah, right. You should have stopped believing in Laban on that first little get-go, right? You know, but taking that little thing, you know, notice the alignment of wives. Okay, a wife sets you up so you can have your own home, right? Mm-hmm. It's one of the reasons why we vote. We vote
so we can have a wife?
No, we vote so we can have a life.
Oh, a life.
Yeah. You know, and so we think we're aligning ourselves to things that would give us that life. But yet the government snatches away and says, here's another wife that'll give you another life. Think of it like that.
Okay.
Okay, and so we keep having this happen lately. Here's your wife for a different governor or a different law or a different president.
So once again, I only want one wife.
I just want a life.
Just one. Don't want two.
Well, see, that's the thing, is that the greater majority of us, I don't know if it's 51% or 75%, I think the greater majority of us don't live out the consequences.
Mm-hmm.
We think that we can change our reality. That's not true. There are consequences to every act that we ever do. And some of the consequences are pretty bad. And you have to go through those because this is what you did. You didn't think enough. You didn't do this enough.
I'm glad you bring that up because that brings us up to this next section. Jacob finally realizes what's going on and he wants out.
Yeah. Hello, McFly.
Get me out. Get out.
Get out.
Okay? So he comes up to Laban and says, give me my wives, give me my children for whom I've served. Let me depart, for you yourself know my servants, which I've rendered to you. Okay? And so we're in chapter 30. There's verse 26.
I am out of here.
I want to leave. So we go up to 27. Laban says to him, if now it pleases you, stay with me. I have divined that the Lord has blessed me on your account. Now, in Tuck's translation, Aaron's translation, it says something different. It says maybe I've been blessed, right?
I have found favor in your eyes.
I found favor. In the original Hebrew context, this word divined actually takes on the meaning of I've been given a divine right to be king.
Okay, so hold on here. How do you mean that he's being like a king?
Well, Laban says, if it pleases you, stay with me. I've been given this divine right to be a king because the Lord has blessed me on your account.
So because of Jacob, he's feeling like a king?
He's becoming, in his own eyes, kingly.
Well, yeah, I don't know about the kingly. Well, I'll have to study that translation as far as kingly. But in my version, even though it's not incorrect from what you said, I said, it came to pass, give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, and let me go, for you know that the service which I have rendered to you. And Laban said to Jacob, if I have found favor in your eyes, remember that's Laban saying to Jacob, if I have found favor in your eyes, I have proven by experience that Yahweh has blessed me for your sake.
Yeah.
This is Laban talking to Jacob.
I get it.
Saying, if I have found favor in your eyes, which I apparently did,
yeah,
because Yahweh, bless me for your sake.
Yeah.
Not for my sake, but for your sake. That's the key. And so he has given.
See what I'm looking at? I'm looking at Hebrew phrases.
Yeah.
Which comes right from Strong's in the interlinear.
Yeah.
Every Bible has a different translation.
Right.
That favor that he believes he's gotten from Jacob. We have the picture through the Hebrew language that he now thinks of himself as a king because of what Jacob did for him. And that's what's interesting to me. And look at Jacob.
So it's like a perception of I feel like I'm being treated like a king because you're so blessing to me because of what the work that you're doing for me.
And he continues in verse 28. So he continues saying, so now name me your wages and I'll give it to you. See how that starts to look picture-wise?
Mm-hmm.
If I'm becoming super wealthy like a king because of your blessings, Jacob, because of how you have helped me, I'll name anything you want. Okay?
Now, the other thought in here is because we have seen that Laban isn't the greatest straight-up shooter here, maybe he's playing Jacob because he already got him a couple times. He's saying, oh, Jacob, you're blessing me so much. Just stay a little bit longer, man. Come on. You're blessing me like a king, man.
Give me another seven. But look at what Jacob says in verse 29. Jacob says this. You yourself know I have served you and how your cattle have fared with me. For you had little before I came, and it has increased to a multitude. And the Lord blessed you wherever I turned. Okay? But now, when shall I provide for my own household also?
Jacob's saying that now.
Now, yes. Jacob's going, look, I've given you all this.
I need to go out on my own, finally.
Thank you.
Hey, this is, I mean, the next few verses, 30, 31, 32, and 33, this is so important, and most of the time we miss it. We don't see the worth of these statements. For it was little which you had before I came, this is Jacob telling Laban, and now it has increased abundantly, and Yahweh has blessed you for my sake.
Yes.
And now what shall I do in order to provide for my own household also? This is, again, mm-hmm. him making the statement that he wants to go out on his own to mm-hmm. provide for himself, provide for his family. And Laban, this is where Aaron's description comes in. Oh, let me have you more for a number of years. How can I live richly if you don't work for me? You know, what shall I give you? And Jacob said, you shall not give me anything. If you will do for me the thing which I tell you, I will go back to feed the sheep in your flock.
Mm-hmm.
That's where he worked for him the final 6 years. This is where he makes that agreement. I will pass through. And this is what's so incredibly funny. This is where I think Yahweh has a marvelous sense of humor. And because this is where he receives his inspiration from, is Yahweh. I will pass through all your flock and select for myself from every speckled and spotted lamb, every brown lamb, and the spotted and speckled among the goats. And of such shall be my wages. And Laban's going, that's right on. You're not going to get anything. You know? And this is what he gets. He gets all his offspring are those ones that he specified. Mm-hmm. You know, and this is where Yahweh is. We're going to get you, buddy. You know?
It is interesting how Jacob starts to claim his wealth. And so how does that align to us in any way? Well, number one, when we finally realize that we want to get out, what does the world offer us? And that's what I want to keep on stating to you this morning and for us to really stress with. Well, don't leave us. We provide you with education.
Mm-hmm.
Don't leave us. I provide you with medical care. Don't leave us. I provide you with government care. But notice what Jacob says. I want my own household.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't want to serve the household of government.
Mm-hmm.
See how this is kind of interesting?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh, see, the list that you're giving there of what the government is saying, I see is carrots.
Carrots, right.
Well, and that's, we've been so programmed in accepting that free feed
mm-hmm.
because that's what the carrots are. They're mm-hmm. free.
Yeah.
You know? The people of America, they're not thinking anymore.
Yeah.
They're thinking, oh, this is a good deal. I'm getting free food.
Yeah.
You know, instead of looking for their own well-being, taking care of themselves, taking care of their family themselves, and they get lost in that freeness.
So now look what happens. After he takes everything, Jacob becomes extremely prosperous himself. Mm-hmm. And that goes to the end of the chapter.
Okay, now wait. When does he become prosperous?
After he goes in and takes the sheep and the goats that he wants to take from Laban's flock. So rather than buying into Laban, of Laban caring for him, he starts to set up his own kingdom, his own household.
Oh, and then he becomes
prosperous.
Weird.
Well, he follows Yahweh's instructions.
He follows
these sheep and these beef. Mm-hmm. You know, he does specific things to them so they will procreate in this fashion.
Yeah.
That's weird. That's a bizarre timing. I'm sure it has nothing to do with anything.
Just coincidence.
But just coincidence, yeah.
But the analogy here that I think I'm getting a hold of is one of the troubles that I have to go through in order to start standing on my own feet is to claim that I want my own household.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
and allow the Lord to bless me.
When did America have its biggest boom?
When they got free from Britain? That was pretty big.
Yeah. It was either, depending on how you look at stuff, either right there or right after World War II.
Yes.
When we kind of said, nope, we're in charge now. We're doing our own way. This is the way we're going to live.
Interesting.
And, you know, coming out of that, the Industrial Revolution was happening. Hmm. And we just boomed.
That is interesting.
And now we're in a place of, no, everything is socialized. I mean, sorry, I used the wrong word. Everything is to be shared. We're all equal now.
Okay.
And we're having struggles.
That brings you into the next chapter.
Oh, really?
Just like that, Aaron. So after Laban sees Jacob become prosperous and all his family, look at what they say. So the man became exceedingly prosperous and had large flocks and female and male servants and camels and donkeys. Now Jacob heard the words of Laban's sons saying, Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what he longed to our father, he has made him wealthy. We want to take it back.
Elon Musk, Jacob broke my...
So Jacob sees the attitude of Laban and his sons and sees that they're not being friendly towards him as formerly. So now he has to go back to Rachel and Leah. So Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah and said to them, I see your father's attitude that's not friendly. But Yahweh of my father has been with me. I know that I have served your father with all my strength. Yet your father has cheated me and changed my wages 10 times. Although Yahweh did not allow him to hurt me. And then he tells him of the speckled flocks. And he tells him about a dream. And it came about at the time when the flock were mating that I lifted up my eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the male goats, which were mating with the striped ones, speckled and molted. Then the angel of God said to me in the dream, Jacob. And I said, here I am.
Oh, there it is again.
And then he goes on to see these blessings. Wow. So why – the first question I have to ask is, what is he trying to convince Rachel and Leah of?
That Yahweh has a plan.
Yeah. And it's time for us to go.
Yeah.
It's time for us to get out again.
He's making sure that they are with him and not with their father.
Right on.
And so that's why he was presenting this to them, is that he wanted to make sure he had willing followers, that he had wives that were truly behind him.
Here's my case.
Yeah. And well, this is what your father has done to me.
Don't you just tell your wife that? Okay, good. It's not just me. Okay.
Originally, that may have been thought so, but I think originally Yahweh wanted a partnership.
Yeah. Yeah, I fully believe that. Yeah. And so that's where he's making his case of, hey, ladies, this is what I'm seeing from Yahweh. Right. We're going, right? You're in agreement?
After he makes the case in verse 14 and 15, Rachel and Leah answers and said to him, do we still have any portion or inheritance in our father's house? Surely all the wealth, and then in 15, are we not reckoned to him as foreigners?
For he has sold us.
Wow.
for he has sold us.
And he squandered also our money.
He consumed our purchase price. Surely all the wealth which Yahweh has taken away from our father belongs to us and our children. Now then, do whatever Yahweh has told you to do.
So clearly they felt that, I don't know if wronged is the right by their father.
Oh, yeah.
But certainly, yeah, we're not connected to him any longer.
We're not here. It's one of the reasons why Rachel takes those idols, because the idols from her father's tent was money.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So she takes them.
Yeah.
But notice how this all. So let's quick do a summary again of Jacob's troubles. Number one, he's running for his life away from a jealous brother.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do we need to start running for our lives if we've been given a birthright? And what, and do we need to protect that birthright? That's a question that we have to ask ourselves. If we've been given a birthright, which we have through the blood of the Lamb, through the death of Yeshua, we have rights to become co-heirs in the kingdom of Yahweh. That's a birthright.
Yes.
How do we protect that? Here's the second one.
Well, I would argue we don't do protect that. He will protect that.
He will. Notice what happens even in Jacob's life, right? He makes the decision to leave, thinking he's going to protect it, but actually who protects it?
Yahweh. Yeah.
Okay? He thinks he's doing it, but Yahweh still does.
Right.
Same is true here. We mm-hmm. think we're protecting something.
Mm-hmm.
He does the work. Number two, he lives in a land and works for an unrighteous relative. Here we
are. Uncle Sam, is that who it was?
Here we are living.
Laban.
Yes. And we got to figure out who our household is, right?
Uh-huh.
He's deceived by Laban, and he marries his first wife, is not his first love, but someone he has to deal with. He's not allowed to leave Laban's household. Laban wants him to stay. We know this because as this chapter keeps on happening, once he leaves, once Jacob leaves with his wives, Laban runs after him, and he wants to pursue him. So
yeah, he doesn't want to let his best man go.
No, he doesn't want him to go. So let's look and see what Laban does. When it was told Laban on the third day that Jacob had fled, verse 23, Laban takes his kinsmen with him and pursues Jacob a distance of 7 days' journey and overtakes him in the hill country of Gilead. But Yahweh came to Laban, the Syrian, in a dream of the night. Notice how he terms him, Syrian.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Aramean.
Now, this is interesting because Laban was considered to be family, but is his heart Hebrew?
Right.
Scripture doesn't claim him as Hebrew. And notice even further, even when Jacob and Laban make a covenant, Laban uses Syrian words or mm-hmm. Armenian words, where Jacob uses Hebrew words.
Yeah.
So he calls him, and the Lord says to him, be careful you do not speak to Jacob either good or bad. So he puts a little bit of fear into Laban, which is kind of nice. And we have this confrontation that occurs. Are we going to be confronted as we try to leave this world?
Do you notice that? I find that very interesting because he said, don't say anything to him, good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't say, don't say anything bad to him. Don't say anything to him at all, good or bad.
Yeah. So what does that mean to you?
It means he has to be utterly neutral towards Israel.
Yes. And leave him alone.
Leave him alone. Yeah.
Is what it means.
Yeah. And so that's an interesting thing because that, if it's going to happen to us similar to this,
mm-hmm.
that will take place again where Yahweh will speak to the Labans of the world that they don't mess with us.
Mm.
And so that's how he's going to protect us.
Yeah.
And so where I don't know that the requirement of running for our lives, I don't think that'll happen the same way because I don't think we'll have to be running for our lives because he's going to protect us.
Well, even if we do run, say if we're Jacob, did Yahweh still protect Jacob?
Oh, you did, yeah.
We found out that he protected him from Esau. We found out that he protected him from Laban. Both of those were evil people running after him.
Right. So there's got to be, maybe it's just for a portion of time that we'll have to run, you know, because it's, and that's I guess, a key is that knowing when to stop running for your life. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Jonah ran too, and he was protected.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
What happens next when they meet?
Fisticuffs.
Let's go to chapter 31, verse 44. I got to back up. I always do that.
You always do that.
Let's 43, no, 42. Let him know. Let's go 37.
41. These 20 years I have been in your house. This is Jacob talking to Laban.
Mm-hmm.
I served you 14 years for your two daughters, 6 years for your flock, and you changed my wages 10 times. If the God of my father, the God of Abraham, the fear of Isaac, had not been for me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. So he confronts Laban and actually gives him an honest report. He doesn't ignore Laban anymore.
Right.
He lays down the witness. How many times are we called to maybe give true testimony? This is amazing.
Yeah.
That Jacob actually decides, I'm going to give you my full testimony. I'm going to lay it out. I'm not going to hide it anymore.
The end of 42 is he rebuked him.
Yeah. God has seen my affliction and the toil of my hands, so he rendered judgment last night.
Yeah.
All right. Then Laban answers and said to Jacob, oh, the daughters are mine and the children are mine. The flocks are mine. All that you see, everything that you have is mine.
Huh.
What a clear distinction. Jacob never says things like that. He says, I've been blessed by Yahweh. Now Laban's true colors come out.
Yeah.
Everything you see, it's mine. Government says, everything you see, it's mine.
Including the rain.
Including the rain.
Right.
That you catch on your roof. It's ours. But what can I do this day to these my daughters or their children whom they have born? So now come, let us make a covenant, you and I, and let it be a witness between you and me. Now notice here too, Jacob is the one who builds this pillar as a witness, as a testimony. But even then, Laban likes to take full credit for it later. But Laban calls it, let's see if you can say it.
Jagar Sahadatuta.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Jagar Sahadatuta.
That's the Armenian.
Excuse you.
Or the Syrian language. But Jacob just calls it Galid.
The pillar of witness.
It means the pillar of witness. It's a heap of witness. It's a heap of witness.
Yeah.
That we're never going to talk again. We're not going to interact again. We're going to separate ourselves from each other. I find this fascinating. Wow. Notice in verse 51, Laban says to Jacob, behold this heap and behold the pillar which I have set between you and me. Jacob was the one that made it.
He's the one that built it.
So, again, Laban shows his true colors.
Okay. Now, this is going to upset some people, but this kind of speaking reminds me of somebody.
Tell me.
Trump.
Really? How?
I did it my way. Yeah. You know, he falls into that same trap.
Maybe he's a little bit of a Laban.
A little bit.
And we still got to claim our own wages. I don't know, but yeah. I did make good wages under Trump.
Well,
it was good.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But it's just kind of funny because the way in which Trump speaks just sounds very familiar to the way Laban is speaking.
Well, think of about Obama.
Well, yeah.
You didn't build that road.
Yeah, we did it.
We'll be right back.
Listening to Hebrew Nation Radio, a division of Torah to the nations. Shalom from the heartland of Israel.
We be back.
We're coming to the end of this Patino Torah study, and it's been fascinating to find out how Jacob is learning about himself through all the little troubles that he has to go through. And he's learning to become a witness.
In fact, a pile of witness.
In fact, at the very end, he actually confronts Laban and tells him the truth. This is what you've been doing to me. I'm done. I'm done.
Right.
And so they form a little witness thing, and it comes between them. And
that's going to be my new tell somebody off. You're just a pile of witness.
Yeah. We're having a witness right here and now. Okay. Wow.
I mean, I guess it would be appropriate. I mean, it would still be saying they are being a witness of a kind.
I find it interesting towards the end of this chapter that even with all that Jacob has learned, he continues now in his life to be a witness to Laban, even though Laban is more the unrighteous one. Notice what happens here. In verse 52, Laban says, "This heap is a witness and the pillar is a witness that I will not pass by this heap to you for harm, and you will not pass by this heap and this pillar to me for harm." Now, it's interesting. Jacob has never caused harm to Laban. But for some reason, Laban doesn't trust him because... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because Laban could be thinking, hey, I realize I wronged him. He's upset.
He could come back.
He's going to come back and he's going to come back and get me.
That's called revenge.
Yeah. Yeah.
They'll look further in 53. The God of Abraham, the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge between us. Notice, again, he doesn't mention necessarily Isaac, but Nahor, which is what Laban knows.
What he's doing there is that Nahor was Laban's father, right?
Yes.
Right. That was Abraham's brother.
Yes.
And so that was a different God.
And yes.
So that's why Jacob he's having all the gods in here, just to reassure Laban that he's considering everything, but he puts Yahweh first.
Well, this is Laban still talking. It's not Jacob talking yet. Laban is claiming the God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge between us. So Jacob swore by the fear of his father, Isaac. Right. What a distinction. Laban does it on the fear of Nahor. But Jacob does it on the fear of Isaac.
He's convinced that he has to put Abraham first, though.
Oh, yeah. Both of them do.
The God of Abraham.
Yeah. But then there's a separation, though, of a belief system.
Even if it's by accident, on Laban's part.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's just in trying to make the argument, it was like, your God and my God, but in that, Yahweh comes out first, even in this, regardless of whatever motivations Laban had.
It's a definite difference.
Yahweh still comes out on top.
Yes, still comes out. And we know that by verse 54. So Jacob offers a sacrifice on the mountain and called his kinsmen to the meal, and they ate the meal and spent the night on the mountain. Notice what Jacob does. Jacob still treats Laban nicely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like family.
Okay. And early in the morning, Laban arose, kissed his sons and daughters, and blessed them. And then Laban departed and returned to his place.
Yeah.
How are we to treat, even if we were to separate ourselves from an unrighteous government, can we do so without burning a bridge, or should we burn a bridge? How do we become unyoked? How do we become unyoked to this world? How do we separate ourselves when we give that statement of here I am? Let's take a moment to look at the here I am statement to see if that helps us. All right? Because we notice there's a number of people in Scripture who make the statement. So what does that mean, and how do we relate to it? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I say here I am, what does that mean when other people did it? So let's start with the first guy, who was Abraham.
Right? Yeah, I found this list of, it says, six people who said, "Here I am."
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Abraham was the first.
Yeah.
In record, and Jacob was the second.
Okay, so Abraham said, "Here I am," to Yahweh, and he did what he was told to do. Mm-hmm. He was tested, and he passed the test.
Yeah.
He brought Isaac, mm-hmm. and even stopped the sacrifice of Isaac because he heard the voice of Yahweh and obeyed.
And I'll bet that second one came a lot quicker.
Right.
The second "Here I am" came much quicker.
Yeah. Remember, Abraham is termed righteous because he believed and he obeyed.
Mm-hmm.
So he hears his voice, obey. Now, did Abraham form any covenant with Abimelech, and who is Abimelech? The king of his present world.
Right.
Okay. So he still formed covenants with them so he could get along in their land.
But it was probably a limited covenant.
Yes. Limited covenant. He didn't follow the customs of the land. He separated himself out of the city,
right.
out but of the land.
He also made a point of the covenant that Abraham made with anybody was that he would die for them mm-hmm. because he gave his word. Mm-hmm. And so right. he would die for them. He would fight for them. He would do their good so long as they also did for him. Because, you know, whenever Abraham was in need, they came running to give him a hand
yeah.
if it was needed.
I find it, though, interesting from the viewpoint that it says, here's my place, here's your place, but right. we still have this covenant, all right? Right? I think of the Amish right off the bat is the first thing that comes into my mind. We have our lands. You, U.S. government, have yours. Can we just be alone? I don't know if that has to do with anything, but
well,
it's kind of weird, isn't it?
I think that there is an example in there of, you know, how we can do that, of recognizing each other's authority and autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
And that we are cohabitating in the same space.
Which is, again, the glory of our first part of our Constitution. It said, hey, there's to be a separation of church and state. It didn't necessarily mean that people can't believe in the U.S.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It meant that the government was not going to support one religion.
One, right. one specific one.
Okay.
You can have all of them, and we've got the freedom of religion. But they came out of England, and it was the Church of England that actually, really, everybody thinks the king was the top authority.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't. It was the head of the church. Mm-hmm. That had all authority mm-hmm. and would tell the king, hey, this is what we're supposed to do. And the king was the executor, basically, of what the church yeah. wanted to do. And so when they restart America, we're not going to have that. We're not going to have the Church of America.
Mm-hmm. We're going to allow – we formed a covenant
yeah.
to allow this belief system.
And so now we have how many hundred yeah. different types of churches?
So we still see Abraham being polite, but yet separating. Mm-hmm. Who else do you have?
The next one on the list is Moses.
Mm.
He says, "Here I am."
And what did Moses do? Moses went.
Not much.
Yeah. He actually goes back to his land that he grew up in.
Right. After getting out.
Yeah, he gets out, but he says, still, here I am, send me.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes back into the land and does what? He gives a warning.
Mm-hmm.
That's polite.
Yeah.
Man, if you guys don't pull this around, if you don't let Israel get out, these things are going to happen to you.
Yeah.
There's another get out picture.
Yeah.
Who else you got?
The next one on the list is Samuel.
Ooh.
As a child.
Here I am.
Here I am.
Now, this is different.
And he says it several times in that evening.
So when Samuel's job, was Samuel warning an outside nation, or did Samuel warn his own church, quote, so to believe?
I think his own people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they were being unrighteous within the church. So mm-hmm. he said, here I am, let me be your servant. And yeah. so Yahweh used him within Israel, within Judah.
And then eventually appoints Saul and David.
Wow. Okay, so let's back up the truck here. This is amazing. Abraham says, here I am.
Mm-hmm.
And he has to deal with his surrounding neighbors. Jacob says, here I am. And he has to deal with family.
surrounding
Moses
neighbors.
says, here I am. And he has to deal with the people who've taken Israel captive. Samuel says, here I am. And he has to deal with their own kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
There's a pattern going on here. What else you got?
Next one is Isaiah.
Oh. Isaiah.
Did he deal with people?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Move on.
He has to deal with two nations that are split. He has to also deal with prophecy.
Yeah.
So he's given prophetic time periods, and he has to bring down judgment. Isaiah is about this book of judgment that God says to him, anyone who does not serve me, I'm going to rip them apart like a lion. I'm going to take their chest and rip open their chest so they have to see me. That's Isaiah's message that he gets to deliver. Wonderful message, right?
Yeah.
Who else you got?
And the last one on this list is Ananias.
Who is Ananias? In the New Testament.
In the New Testament.
Ananias and Sapphira.
What is his? No, this is a different one.
Yeah.
Who is Ananias? Ananias is the one that has to take the scales off of Paul's eyes. Because remember, Saul, before he becomes Paul, persecutes the church.
Right.
Then he's knocked off of his stupid little donkey. Mm-hmm. He hears the voice of Yah, and he changes his life, but mm-hmm. he's blinded. And Ananias says, I don't want anything to do with this man.
Yeah. This is a really bad dude right now.
But he still says, here I am.
Yeah.
So he has to take the scales off of the persecutor. Wow. Everyone who says, here I am, does something highly important with people around them.
So the moral of the story is,
be careful.
If you don't want to go up against a Goliath, don't say, here I am. Maybe that's the wrong message to take.
Okay, Isaac, here I am. I got to deal with my family. Abraham, here I am. I have to deal with Abimelech, and I have to deal with trust. Oh, that's it. Trust. I have to trust my son to you. That's when he says, here I am.
Yeah.
Okay? Isaac, now I have to trust you with my family. And then we have the here I am with, who was it, Samuel?
Moses.
Moses, free my family.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, oh, this is cool. I trust you with my family. I have to deal with my family. I have to free my family. That's Moses. Mm-hmm. Samuel, I have to give a righteous message to my family. Isaiah, turn towards Yahweh family, please. Ananias, the persecutor.
Quit
beating up my family. Wow, this is a study. I know we're projecting a lot here, okay? And we're assuming a lot. But that's what...
But the themes are there.
The themes seem to be there. There's also this other theme is that every one of these, of here I am, caused for these people to be unyoked to the burdens around them and to be re-yoked to Yahweh. Unyoked from the burdens around them and re-yoked to Yahweh.
Yeah.
Are you called out? I think I want to ask us this for the modern day times because everyone is kind of struggling with this. How do I separate myself or are we called to be separated? What does that look like? What does that look like? I'd accidentally heard some of our youth are struggling with this a lot.
Well, I don't think it's a struggle at all. It's just looking at the concept, and if you believe Yahweh, you believe in the truth, well, then it has to be true. You have to figure that out. And it's when Yeshua was presented with the face of the Roman leaders on their coinage. And it says, give to Caesar what is his, give to Yahweh what is his.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's It's you live in the world, be a part of the world until the conflicts.
Right.
When it conflicts with me, you follow me.
Mm-hmm.
And that there are certain times where it never approaches confusion. It never approaches difficulty because it's pretty much straightforward. It's real easy to do, in my opinion. But there are times to where, and maybe it's a lot in your life for whatever reason, that you're challenged every single day on separating between man and Yah. Mm-hmm. And you have to make the proper choice. You know?
So you were seen following, because you'd mentioned that word, I follow. That to you is easy. I either follow man or I follow Yeshua.
Yeah.
And to you, that seems to be pretty clear cut.
It is clear cut. I mean, it's. If I'm going to follow the God of the world, the King of the world, his ways, if I'm a believer, there's no issue. It should be no issue because here's man over here. Here's the King of creation over here, Yahweh Yeshua. Mm-hmm. And he says, do this, scratch my head. I think I'll do that. he's the King of all things. He's the creator.
Wow.
Why do we make that difficult? Because, yeah, it's nice doing it man's way because it's nice and comfortable and easy. I get rewarded, da da da. Yahweh gives us rewards too, but they're long term.
They're more, yeah,
they're forever. They're
spiritual.
Eternity.
There's peace. There's shalom. If I follow man, I join China in beating up its citizens.
Yeah.
I join Fauci in mandating.
Yeah.
If I follow man, I strap people down.
Yeah.
Isn't it funny that in John, Yeshua comes at the time of Roman rule, which is another time of downtrodding or locking down people. And notice what happens. Two of the disciples that follow John the Baptist see Yeshua and they hear him speak. So this is in John 1, verse 37. And two disciples heard Yeshua speak and they follow Yeshua. And Jesus turns and behold them following and said to them, what do you seek? And they said to him, Rabbi, which means teacher, where are you staying? Because a disciple means they're going to give everything to him and follow. And he said to them, come, and you will see. They came, therefore, and saw where he was staying, and they stayed with him that day, for it is about the 10th hour. One of the two who heard John speak and had talked about Yeshua, had followed him, was Andrew, Simon Peter's brother. And he found first his own brother, Simon, and said to him, we found the Messiah. He brought him to Yeshua, and Yeshua looked at him and said, you're Simon, the son of John. You shall be called Kephas, which means Peter. The next day, he proposed to go forth into Galilee, and he found Philip, and Yeshua said to him, follow me. Now, Philip was from Bethesda, the city of Andrew and Peter. Philip found Nathanael and said to him, we've found him, of whom Moses in the law and also the prophets wrote, Yeshua, the Messiah of Nazareth, the son of Joseph. Notice what they used to find him. The Tanakh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Nathanael said to him, can any good thing come out of Nazareth? Philip said to him, come and see. Yeshua sees Nathanael coming to him and said of him, behold, an Israelite indeed, in whom there's no guile. And Nathanael says to him, how do you know me? Yeshua answered and said to him, before Philip called you, when you were under the fig tree, I saw you. We have that kind of Messiah. He sees us. He knows us.
Yeah, he knows you at your core.
So if I make that statement, here I am. Here I am ready to be a disciple of yours. Here I am ready to follow you. Here I am to be used by you. That's a tall order.
Yeah. I mean, and that's, you know, at the beginning I said, I had that thought of, man, this seems to be a bold statement. After kind of looking at this, it really is.
It is.
When you say it at this level, it really kind of is. I mean, it's a big deal.
Hineni, behold.
Yeah.
Behold's big.
Mm-hmm.
I'm ready to serve.
And that's why I think the Hebraic way of understanding is that, and it's very, maybe just semantics, but it's not, I don't think it's here I am, it's here am I.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, well, it's just a reversal of two words. But it says here, right there, mm-hmm. here, am, existence, being.
Behold me.
I.
Am ready.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Here am I.
This small little person yeah, ready to go.
Exactly.
Take me and use me,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. And it's, you know, and we don't complicate things. We overcomplicate things, but we also don't complicate things enough.
Right.
Because Yahweh gave us these to use, mm-hmm. these brains, and there's incredible power in these brains. I think this is yeah. the most powerful computer there is in existence, period.
So if I give that computer over to the master, do I need to be distracted by all the squirrels that come our way?
No.
Because we have all these discussions.
They're just humorous. Yeah. I mean, we have fun with that yeah. squirrel.
Squirrel.
Yeah. You know, but that's a humorous thing, and that's showing us our fallibilities, mm. our simpleness, mm-hmm. you know, and that's a constant reminder of, he's king and I'm not.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. We've always talked about this before. If I'm in the truth, if I am in the word, then I recognize that which is not truth.
Yeah.
If I'm outside of truth and not in the word, then I cannot recognize that which is untruth.
Right.
That is really critical. And we get caught up into all these terrible things like genderism and yeah. all these sorts of things.
It looks so reasonable.
It looks reasonable, but yeah. it's not according to truth.
Yeah.
Separate yourselves out from that.
Yeah.
Well, guys, this was a lot of fun. We haven't done this in a long time to just take the full time
yeah.
to just go over the
Talk
Torah
about
section.
The word. Yeah. yeah.
So thanks for, I mean, this was interesting. If we're going to do a shameless plug. Please check into Hebrew Nation Radio. Support them. It's the end of the year, okay? And you have money you're going to give to the IRS. Give it to Hebrew Nation Radio instead.
That's right.
It's that easy, okay?
You get a one-to-one deduction.
A one-to-one deduction. Help us stay on the air and that we can continue to bless you. Look up the teachers that are on there. Go to the marketplace. Buy the books that are there. We want to be able to serve you in a way that you are blessed.
When do you have a book that's going to be in there?
I know. we're working on that even as we speak.
See, I know you. I know you.
Well, you can write into us. Tell us where we're failing or succeeding with you. That's the number 3.
WiseGuys@HebrewNation.net.
That's the number 3.
WiseGuys@HebrewNation.net.
Yeah, give us your prayers too, things that we need to be concerned about. Find a fellowship. Aaron, how do they find fellowships? I mean, even on our site they can go to, right? But we're listed in a number of other sites.
Right, yeah. The best one I've found, I mean, and there's many of them, uh-huh. is at 119 Ministries. They've got a real good one.
Uh-huh.
And I've seen others who use, maybe it's the same platform that they're using. I don't know where that comes from. But
yeah.
that's a really, really good tool to kind of find where everybody's at.
Right. You know, if you're local and you're listening to this, come look us up at Mid Valley Fellowship. We're right in Silverton, wonderful congregation that loves to love
yeah.
on people.
Yeah.
So
and we're from all over the place. People from Springfield, Eugene, all the way up north of Portland.
You got it.
So
it's pretty amazing.
Get out.
Get out. So, yeah, that's the message for today, you guys. Get out of your whatever. What are we supposed to get out of it, Aaron?
The world.
Maybe even ourselves.
Sometimes. Yeah.
Get out of Dodge.
Yeah.
If you're depressed, get out.
Get out.
If you're being ornery, and get out.
If you're stuck at home,
get out.
Darkness must flee from the light.